All right, so there were a couple of comments. So there were a couple of comments that boil down to an observation, I think, in both that or a question: why did we do C++ bindings, templates, and so forth instead of maybe a C definition? And then build C++ on top of it. And an observation that if we had done the C, you could bind it to other languages. And yes, that's completely accurate. It's actually something we're looking at now. We've had a lot of requests for C bindings. I would say, honestly, I don't think our team, we completely understood how much pain the need for C bindings would create. But we're much more aware of it now. is that polite enough? The reason we went after it is we really did want to solve the C++ problems and not ignore STL and containers. So that was on our mind. The other thing is that templates is an explicit way to extend C++. C doesn't have an explicit way to extend C. You become an incompatible compiler or you just do function calls. There's some advantages of what we're doing by avoiding function calls. So templates expand and are much more efficient. If we have to go to a real function call, which C would force us to, that's going to create some inefficiencies, and we have some doubts about how well that will work. I'll mention later a project called Silk that we're doing. So we're going to do two things. We're probably going to add C bindings to TBB because our customers are definitely asking for that. We have some doubts because of that'll turn out to be efficient enough for a lot of people because of the function call overhead. We have a project called Silk to add some keywords to the C language. That'll make us not compatible with other Cs, but we think that there will be, in time, compilers will want to add some keywords. Apple's already doing it. We're thinking of doing it. We're talking to Microsoft and the GNU community. We may take a step forward with some of them that I mentioned, or we may take a step forward and test the grounds. And what we have in mind is a compiler implementation of keywords that would be very C-oriented, that sit on top of the TBB runtime and create calls, create interaction with it, but do it in a very C manner. And that should make it easy to export the C routines and so forth. Very good observations, and yeah, where were you when we were designing this 5 years ago? OpenMP works pretty well for C programmers, and we have had some challenge at overcoming the popularity of OpenMP. C++ programmers tend to try TBB and really love it, but the adoption with C programmers has been much smaller, radically smaller. So, anyways, we've got a bunch of routines: parallel for, parallel scan. If you don't know what a parallel scan is, and you want to get into parallelism, it's kind of a fun thing to look at. It's something that parallel implementations commonly miss, but computer scientists that are really into parallelism will say, "Hey, it's going to be a mistake to miss this." You probably won't get any speed up in parallel scan until you get to at least 4 cores, but it's a way to do something in parallel that looks like it can't be done in parallel. Imagine a series of numbers where a sub n equals a sub n minus 1 and some equation operating on it. In other words, each element of an array depends on what the value of the element before it was with some computation attached, doubling it, adding something, whatever. That can actually be done in parallel with a multi-pass algorithm. Depends on exactly the equation, how efficient that is, but that's what parallel scan's about. And most people look at that, an equation like that, and say it can't be done in parallel. It's one example of some things that can be done in parallel. They're not nearly as efficient as doing it in sequential, but it scales. So who cares? This is a big part of how to do parallel programming, is you have to figure out efficiency isn't the name of the game anymore. Scaling is. So if you have an algorithm that's a third as efficient but can scale onto 100 processors, and your efficient algorithm can only run on one processor, the scaling is going to win. So there's a lot of things, parallel fours, four eaches. There's a pipeline operation, which is people have been extraordinarily creative at what to do with pipelines. We thought that this was a cool feature to add, and we'll see if anyone uses it. And for a while, for the first year, I'd say that 40 to 50% of people using threading building blocks, any of these algorithms, were using pipeline, and that just astonished us. But lots of people said, oh, I figured out how to map this onto it, and people are very creative. Parallel invoke for parallelism, and parallel sort. So anyways, yes, flattery goes a long ways. So a team started up at Microsoft, implemented something into their C++ compiler. They'll release it in April. It's in beta now. They imitated a subset of TBB. They called it PPL, for Parallel Patterns Library. And they also came to us and said, hey, there's some concurrent containers. We know you've already written code for it. Could we have that code and be completely compatible with you, which we did. So they're releasing that. But then they were also able to do something. They also ported it to their .NET environment. So for some people, this is really makes them look at TBB in a different light and say, hey, this is great. Microsoft's doing something very similar, so it's safe to code in it. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to pass a value judgment whether people should think that way, but there's a lot of people who do, and this is important. But before Microsoft releases that, they still haven't released it. It's in beta, but we've gotten a lot of adoption of threading building blocks. A very popular application, Autodesk Maya. Maya is just heavily used. I go to lots of customers in the entertainment segment, Hollywood, gaming, you know, entertainment arts and stuff, use Maya. Maya was surprisingly not very threaded. By the way, neither was some other very popular programs too that we've worked with, but the Maya's doing this. Actually, the Epic Unreal Engine's using TBB now a little bit. They'll use it more in the future, and they're encouraging developers that do plugins to use TBB. So this is, and Maya encourages developers doing plugins to use TBB as their parallelism. Having a standard's really great, and these guys have gotten really good performance out of it. And that's a 10 million line program. Well, I'll come back to that later, but it's just staggering to put parallelism into that. So let me talk a little about the open sourcing, because this is kind of fun. We released this as a commercial product in August of 2006. And some of us believed that we probably were going to want to open source this, but we didn't make the strong case for it in Intel because, frankly, we would have failed. But we got it out in the community and started getting serious interest in it, evaluation, and said, hey, this is good. This is a good implementation. We want to use it. But there were two problems. If we use it and code it into our application as the way we do parallelism, will it work on, is it ported everywhere? And we said, well, we've got Windows, Linux, Mac OS done. We've done Intel processors and AMD. And Itanium processors, and we've done, and we're working on a Spark port and a PowerPC port. And people said, oh, that's lovely. That's everything I need now, but what if I need something in the future? Will you sign a piece of paper that says that forever and ever, Intel will make sure that they port it to anything I ever ask them for? And, you know, our lawyers, we didn't even ask our lawyers to look at that. So we knew that was a problem. The other thing is even more fascinating. I like to call it, well, what if Intel gets bored and quits producing it as a product? A very real threat too. I mean, not that we would get bored of this, but it's something, if you're going to write a program that requires a piece of proprietary software to compile it, lots of people are worried about that. For some reason, a lot of people have confidence that Microsoft will support things forever, but beyond Microsoft, you know, there's a lot of questions, and so we definitely had big question marks by our name. So we looked at a variety of ways to try to solve this, promised them that they could have the code, escrow it, whatever. But we were all the time thinking open source is probably the answer, and that's what we did. So we open sourced it in July of 2007 and called that 2.0. And since then, we've released a few more versions. We've gotten contributions. We have an Xbox 360 port that was done by somebody, and we were just surprised with. We've had some other ports where people have contacted us, said they wanted to work with us on them. It's been a big success, both in terms of usage of it, contributions to the project, recognition, so forth. It's been really good. These are a few pictures from OzCon when I introduced it. I got reminded because someone dug up some photos of me in a suit, which is actually a pretty rare thing unless I'm at a wedding. But Dirk Handel, who I don't, some of you may know Dirk, he used to be CTO at SUSE a decade ago. It's probably a decade now. My gosh. Has it really been that long? Anyways, he joined us from SUSE. He talked me the day before into really leaving an impression at OzCon. He said, because we were worried, I only had a few minutes on stage right after Tim O'Reilly, and how do you leave an impression? He says, you'd leave an impression if you stood up in front on a stage in a suit and tried to sell them TBB before you announced you were open sourcing it. Yeah, it left an impression. Fortunately, they figured out it was a joke and didn't run me out on rails, but Dirk jumped up on stage and we got applause and people remembered it, but that's why I was in a suit. And I did tell him that it was a bargain at $299 before I told him we were open sourcing it. They all put their laptops down and listened. Who is this crazy guy? It's been very successful for us. It really was a thrill convincing Intel to do this. And, you know, we were looking at whether our interests would be protected. And it's kind of interesting. When we went to select the license, we kind of had an attitude that's very similar to any of you that contribute to open source projects or me. When I do something, it's become common in the open source community. One of the things you don't want to happen is that you work really hard on it, you contribute it, and someone else takes it off in a corner, does a few adjustments on it, starts making a bunch of money off of it, and won't share what they did. Well, you know, that's the essence behind GPL licenses. In one thing it solves is to make sure that contribution to the community stays the community, and that if you want to play in the community, you contribute and share. You know what? We're okay with that at Intel. It was kind of interesting. We settled on the GPL license for this because we had the same headache. We put a lot of work into it. We're ready to share it. We were not too thrilled with the idea of a competitor taking it, turning it for their own desires, and hiding it, taking it proprietary. So that's why we went with the GPL license. And I found it kind of interesting that as we examine what are we afraid of, we're afraid of the same things individuals are afraid of, about putting the effort and the IP into it, and we're willing to share it, but we're not willing to have someone take it and make it their own. No, so we went with a dual license, like MySQL. So Intel still holds the copyright to the code. And I know with some of the community this is controversial, and some of the community it's like, yeah, of course, you know, that's a good thing to do. But because of that, we were able to share with Microsoft. That was one of our motivations of doing it. The other motivation is we make the binary available non-GPL, and there are a non-trivial number of companies out there that will not touch something GPL. Now, we released it under GPL V2. V2 was current at the time we released this. V3 didn't exist. GPL V2 with ClassPath exception. It's the same lot. It's the same license that's used for the C++ STL library with GNU. ClassPath exception, by the way, is the C++ answer to how do you prevent from being viral your license when you use it. It's the same as LGPL is to C. LGPL is the library license that says if you link with it, you're not polluted. Unfortunately, C++, you actually include the source code into your program and compile it, so it needed a different license. But what we're doing is exactly what the GNU C++ library does. But yeah, we did the dual license because some people in the world feel are scared of GPL, and you know, I can't render legal opinions for them. There's very little case law right now. There have been very few lawsuits around GPL. And lawyers in general will say, if it hasn't been tested in courts around the world, be nervous. So in any case, the dual license solved that. MySQL has become extremely popular in the world because they did it. And the database is people feel confident they can use MySQL in commercial situations because they buy they pay some money that helps with the development of MySQL. So we make the non-GPL library binary available. But if you want the source code, it's you go with the GPL. our GPL and our non-GPL are identical. Same source code, no changes. The only thing we do is the license, and they're maintained at the same. Actually, the open source version is always released a few weeks earlier. Question? So I can't comment on the legal agreements between us and Microsoft, but what I can say is the decision boiled down to this. We're promoting TBB in the open source community as a parallel solution for C++. We're very adamant about driving that, helping it, supporting it. We put more people on the project after we open sourced it than we had before, which is critical success. And Microsoft came along and said, "Hey, we'd like to do exactly what you're doing, but we, you know, if we implement it ourselves, it might be a little different. Do you want to give us the code?" So at that moment, we had to decide. If we said no, we were probably driving Microsoft to be incompatible. We had the opportunity to make them compatible from the start. I think they'll stay compatible. I think it's in their best interest, and I can't describe whether we put anything legal in place. But it was a relatively easy decision for us because we had the opportunity to keep them compatible with the open source, and we jumped at it. Do I feel thrilled out of my mind about that? Well, I'm okay with it. I would have rather they just adopted the open source project, but that wasn't going to happen. Okay, so the question was, our team's an engineering team in an engineering company, a for-profit company. How do we market inside Intel that we should be allowed to continue working on something that we're giving away? Excellent question. Well, there's a strong belief in Intel that this move to multi-core is a big challenge in the software community. And I think that we're well recognized inside the company as experts at this, and we talk about the barriers to that. And we look at it and say, well, what can we do to lower the barriers, increase the likelihood that people write software that can use what we can build? And that's where it derives from. And so threading building blocks, the pivotal thing at Intel to convince us to open source it was, if we open source this, we'll get more adoption of it. And I work for a company that, hey, getting adoption of the software is in our best interest, and we aren't looking to make money off of it. So we're kind of in a great position. We do a lot at Intel to support and promote open source. I think we've been the most aggressive at releasing graphics drivers open source in the community. We've contributed the Linux kernel. And in my team, we're seeing that the ability to do parallelism and drive that, that open source is a great approach. In fact, If we knew then what we know now, we should have open sourced our OpenMP implementation for the GNU community. By the time GNU was working on OpenMP and we would have thought to do that, it was a little too late, and that's unfortunate. And hopefully, in the future, we recognize that a little more quickly. We're a company that's making money, and we tend to treat things proprietary, and doing things open source takes a little extra effort. And we're getting there, though. We're understanding the extreme power of that. And it's very altruistic, too. We really can just say, hey, we don't use it for parallelism. Yes, not all of it will run on our hardware, but we call it float all boats, the phrase in Intel. It's we give it away, and it might be used for everything, but that's good. Right. Question is, what's available standard, the documents about the APIs and so forth? Well, the whole thing is open source, but they're, and it's available at threadingbuildingblocks.org, or I think there's an alias called opentbb.org. There are specifications and so forth there. And then the second part of your question was, are we doing anything about standardization? We've taken a few of the things that we think are really key to this, and we've recommended them to the C++ committee. I think some of them came out in a technical report, which is, I can't describe adequately what use a technical report is in C++. It's not in the draft standard. I think what it means is it's been published for review and feedback, and it might make it to a draft standard someday in the future, but it's definitely not in 0x, any parts of this. But we think it has a place there eventually. Okay. So there's a comment that some countries mandate implementations of the TRs, technical reports. Okay, I didn't know that, but if it's true, then it's probably someone thinks they've mandated it being implemented, some parts of it. Given that it's open source and everybody should just grab the open source version and use it, it's not too hard to implement. Yeah, so the question, there's a question about whether or whether I see a future or what type of future I see at avoiding the von Neumann bottlenecks by using different programming approaches and such. And why don't I'm going to touch on some ideas on that in the future, and I'll come back to that.
Sorry for the interruption. It's 12. We have shuttle until 12:15. It's fantastic to have this dynamic. I tell you, I don't know how much do you want to tell.
I will finish at 15
after.
No,
it's not about that. Be warned that these guys will keep asking questions. So I'm not sure if we have a lunch service with Francois that we can bring here to stay until 1:30. It's all included. So that's the point. There is a lunch. Yeah. Lunch is coming late, so you just have all fun, right. And you too, guys. So just wanted to.
all right. So let me take this question, and then I'm going to I'll wrap through the last thoughts I had. What? Excellent. Same sort of thing as the von Neumann question. The question's more about are we just fooling ourselves? I'm paraphrasing for you, but are we just fooling ourselves by continuing this share everything model and programming, and shouldn't we just move to a share nothing model and force you to declare everything you're sharing? Absolutely. Completely agree that that's what we should do. It's completely impractical. So if you look at how much software there is in the world already and adding parallelism to it, it comes back to three big barriers. One is legacy. There's a lot of software, so how do you move it? Another is education. Most people don't know much about parallel programming, haven't enough experience with it for it to be intuitive to get it right the first time. Even the experts I know usually don't get it right when they try it the first time, right? I mean, how many of us, even things we feel comfortable about, don't just put a prototype together, learn from it, and change? Well, imagine when you don't know what you're doing, how many prototypes you need. And then finally, tools. The tools just aren't there. So there's. Let me go through just a few more thoughts that I have in my presentation that I think will give a framework for this. And I come back and answer a little bit. And then I'm glad there's enthusiasm for this. So I'm sure we're going to have a great panel discussion where the audience gets to ask even more later today. So let me go through. So a couple things. I already touched on the license. We picked GPL v2 class path exception. We went with a dual license. One thing that was an interesting discussion is, do we open source the code or do we try to push an open API? And it's pretty easy to say, well, do both. And that's what we did with running building blocks. But I'm not sure that's the best answer all the time. I think it may be better to get an API like OpenMP and drive it into multiple compilers. Because if you don't do that, you run the risk that everyone will never adopt it. And so there's some things here. But let me say, you know, what we'd like is a programming model that can survive the future. And I described some possible processors before that may have big cores and little cores and lots of fancy things like that. So where do you get a programming model? And I've realized people are looking for what's the right programming language to use, or what's the right programming model. And I realized, as someone with some background in this area, when people ask me, should I use RapidMind for data parallelism, or should I use TBB, I realize, ooh, they don't understand something. That is that you probably want to use two or three models of parallelism in your program at a time when you really get it working. And so I've developed this three-tier model that I'm still refining, but data parallelism is a very fundamental thing, and it's beautiful what you can do with it, and I can't fully describe all its wonders this morning, but there's data parallelism at the instruction level, things like SIMD instructions like those SSE and MMX instructions. There's data parallelism at the hardware level with multiple cores. Writing a program that takes advantage of both at the same time is hard because you usually do an innermost loop, use the SIMD instruction, and the loop outside that to spread it across cores. Why? Well, because that's the best languages we have today. That needs to get fixed. Data parallelism is a fundamental thing that should just be specified by a programmer as, hey, here's what I want to do, and have something translate that into the hardware. But then task parallelism, which is what often gets thought of, you want good support for that as well. And threading building blocks, you can write data parallelism and task parallelism and actor-agent sort of things in TBB, but if you had to pick one, it's generally promoting a task model. And so it leaves some opportunities, but you can combine these. You could have tasks controlling multiple data parallelism. You could put it together in a pipeline. And the next thing you know, you've got all these different models that you're using, and should we be looking for a solution that does all of these, or should we start to recognize that sometimes we are doing data parallelism, very highly, tightly coupled data work, sometimes we're doing task parallelism, but sharing memory, and sometimes we're doing more of a coordination effort and doing message passing. And in this top one, usually you have a shared nothing model. And so I think the future is that you use all three of these in a program. Now, how do we teach that? How do we think about it? A little bit more challenging. But if we look today, there's so many things being proposed for parallelism. I think it can clarify in your mind how to classify these if you think very simply that they fit in one of these three categories. So things like MPI, Erlang, the pipelines and threading building blocks, sort of, although they're sharing there, but you can, if you don't, you don't have to do sharing. Microsoft's Axum, which is a project that they put out there, actors, agent sort of thing. Lynda could go here. Intel's connected components. There's a lot of coordination sort of things being floated out there. And when you read about them, they may be very confusing. Like, why on earth is someone thinking about this? They're thinking about the shared nothing environment and trying to propose something. Then at the task level, you've got threading building blocks. Silk Arts is C++, or Silk++, which, you know, we acquired this company, and we're going to put it in our compilers, and Microsoft's flattery of the same thing. And then data parallelism, you have RapidMind. Oh, yeah, we bought them, too, last summer. That was a lot of fun. And in fact, that's where I was just before I came to New Zealand. I was up in Toronto with the RapidMind team, combining with CT technology. Fortran 90 arrays, IPP. And I left CUDA off of here, even though CUDA and OpenCL kind of fit here. They don't feel that they've abstracted from the hardware enough for me to list them on the same slide, but they're going after the data parallelism, so that's why they exist. So if you think about this, perhaps we can think about programming models in three categories. One is the share nothing message passing coordination, another is task parallelism, another is data parallelism. And if you start thinking that way, wow, you can really drive some really cool things. There's things we can do in CT RapidMind because we're not trying to solve task parallelism that are beautiful, and we'll make them work with TBB, which is more at a task level. And these specializations in these three areas, I think, are going to strengthen rather than blur when we really get the programming right.
I have a full plan,
Okay. So the comment is, perhaps there's a fourth level, which is, it's not even the same machine you're distributing. Yeah, and I don't know. This coordination shared nothing model fits that. However, you know, if you're using MPI on a supercomputer, you're shooting messages back pretty good bandwidth. You're closely coupled. You're shooting a message from New Zealand to Australia to have a little data processed on somebody's machine in Sydney. It's a little different than sitting in the same cabinet. And I don't know. It's a really good point. I don't know if models, they will specialize. They do today. So will we think of them? It's an interesting point that perhaps on top this shared nothing, maybe it needs to be thought of in two ways. Yeah. So, yes. Okay, let me hold Grand Central. There's a question about Grand Central Dispatch, and I'll talk about that at the end. In fact, we've been talking to the Grand Central Dispatch team about whether TBB can fit into their world or how it fits into their world. We support it on Mac. Let me hold that to the end. I wanted to make sure that in my allotted time, which I have a couple minutes, that I leave you with just a couple more thoughts before I take questions. Let's see. So we're doing a bunch of cool things here. I'll post these slides. I'll find out where to post them to, and they'll be available to you later today. I wanted to say I really think that open source can be pivotal to parallel programming. I think the need to do parallel programming today is there, the desire to do it, but for it to be deployed and used a lot, there's the standardization, availability, porting, so forth issue that holds over things. And having the experience of OpenMP taking more than a decade for it to be adopted enough that people could feel confident of it, because it was had to be implemented in compiler after compiler, and not every company jumped on the boat as fast, and even GNU. Open sourcing is a very real option to driving this sort of adoption. Of course, one of the challenges is we'll open source so many different solutions you can't figure out which one's the right one, but I think it's very pivotal, and threading building blocks has been very successful. There's an analyst report by Evans Data that follows the industry that says that threading building blocks is the most popular in terms of deployment and usage abstraction in the C++ community for parallelism. And they did some surveys and found what people were using, and that really caught us. I think it was about 4% of the community said they were using it versus 3% OpenMP, just to give you a calibration, but it beat out OpenMP, which had been around for a decade, showed the power to us of the success we were having by open sourcing. How can we help open source drive this and own this before it becomes proprietary? Because I think there is a danger that proprietary solutions will pop up that interfere with the adoption of parallelism. And, you know, at Intel, I'd rather see parallelism adopted than see any barriers in the way. So I'm, you know, kind of self-serving here. But I think there's an alignment between what we'd like to see from Intel, which is a lot of adoption, and what the open source community can do. Threading building blocks is an example of a success there. I'd like to see more energy in the open source community. So we are doing some projects like Silk and CT, and they are proprietary right now, but trust me, we are looking at, can we get the first implementation put together, get feedback like we did with TBB, and then figure out how to introduce that in the open source community strongly, and we will follow up on that within the next year. Those things will go open in one way or another. I'm confident. We haven't made that decision yet, but the success of TBB, I think, will drive us to that. So that was my... that was my overview of TBB and so forth, and I've forgotten there was a question. What's the
but
one?
Before that, let me do a little bit of marketing bullshit, which is you won't be a member of a corporation if you don't bring some presents for the audience. No?
No. That's only for Windows.
Oh, cool. Then I have a few dozens of this, which is something that you will explain better.
The CDs have, they're kind of cool to pop in and find out more about what we're doing, but they're very quickly after you click on things, they point to places on the web. So it's kind of a neat navigation thing, but if you go to our website and look, you can find the same things. This would be sort of a reminder to do that.
And, well, I'm a technology entrepreneur, so I try to build an ecosystem around multi-core parallelization, but if you are curious enough, it's enough for you to find what the hell I'm doing or what. But as a benevolent dictator of this day or MiniConf, I've been given 3 books to distribute to whoever I believe. Guys.
Oh, you have more. He somehow talked to some other folks at Intel and found out that we had a few of my books laying around, and he talked them out of them. So,
first of all, I would love to thank all of you for being here. So it has been wildly successful, more than... I'm definitely not interested to become an event manager or organizer or whatever, but that's been a very good thing. And thank you, James, for being here. And the only thing that I need to say now is that it's all yours.
All right.
I'm going out for lunch.
Thank you. I do need to go to lunch. So what I'm going to do is I'll stick around, but I don't want to hold you here. So run off to lunch. We have... I'll talk about Grand Central first thing then. We do have the... I'll talk about teaching later, and we have the panel and such. It'll be a great chance to get back together and ask a lot of questions about anything that's on your mind after lunch. So go ahead and do that, and after there's a little bit of noise, I'll stick around. If people want to stick around and talk, that's great. I'll answer the Grand Central Dispatch question first. So.
And please come back later, because he's not the only star speaking this afternoon. So, and assuming that you're a star, whatever. It's 1:30, 1:30, 13:30, whatever language we want. We start at 1:30, and we go until 3:15, and then we just have 30 minutes for afternoon tea. James will be back at 4:25. There are a lot of interesting
things. Lots of great talks before that.
All
right.
And the panel and the birth of a feather, it's something that I strongly encourage you to come here. Thank you very much, guys. Mm-hmm.